Our presentation today is Evoking Spiritual Experience in Our Lives by Eileen Hakes, which it relates to our third principle, acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations. Eileen Hakes received her master's degree in psychology from Antioch University. She worked as a psychotherapist in private practice for over 25 years, specializing in the field of hypnotherapy. Before retiring and moving to Wisconsin, she was owner of the Alchemy Institute in Colorado, where she taught state-approved certification training in hypnotherapy to hundreds of practitioners in the healing arts. Welcome, Eileen.
Thank you, Barb. And in the spirit of challenging the norm, I'd like to share my pronouns. They're not on the screen, but I'll share them now because it's in a somewhat unconventional manner. When it comes to my physical gender, I am she, her. But when it comes to my psychological and my mental gender identity, I'm absolutely male, female, and masculine and feminine. And when it comes to my spiritual self, there's no gender at all. So if I fail to put my little she, her, when we meet together and on my name tag, understand that that's because for my own personal self, I find it a somewhat limiting way to define myself. So if you have any questions or concerns about that, please feel free to share them with me. I'm happy to talk more about it. And that being said, I absolutely honor the needs of the LGBTQ community in that regard, and have supported as a straight ally that community for many, many years. From the moment we are born, we grow. The most obvious way we grow is physically. Each of us has witnessed the physical transformation that occurs as human beings change from newborns to toddlers, into young children, adolescents, and adults. Our intellectual development is pretty obvious too. When we're born, we absorb and process information through everything we see, hear, and feel. Speech and communication develop, and soon we add reading, writing, and performing mathematical equations to our repertoire. In the preteen years, a major shift occurs, and the human animal develops the capacity to reason and to make cognitive judgments about the world around us. All these skills are necessary if we are to live safe and productive lives. We can also observe the maturation of our emotions. Pioneers in the field of human emotional development, such as Erik Erikson, have outlined distinct stages of emotional growth during which we learn to trust, become autonomous, take initiative, develop intimate relationships, and reflect upon our lives. When we use language rather than violence to resolve a dispute, or express laughter and tears at appropriate times, we show signs of emotional growth and maturity. It is easy to observe the human processes of physical, intellectual, and emotional development. Scientists can measure these things. However, there is another dimension of our existence that throughout history, human beings have explored. It is a dimension which is harder to measure or quantify, though some contemporary physicists claim to be coming close. And that is the realm of the spirit or the soul. What is this spirit or soul, which so many theologians, philosophers, and poets have attempted to define? As Unitarian Universalists, should we be talking about it? I'd like to talk about spiritual experience and spiritual growth, not only because it is a topic I believe to be of interest, but because it is a phrase used in our third Unitarian Universalist principle, which states that we covenant to affirm and promote acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations. But what is meant by spiritual growth? Of the seven principles which guide our faith, this one may be the most difficult to interpret and define. But while it may be difficult to observe or quantify spiritual experience and spiritual growth in the way we might observe or quantify weight gain in a healthy child, or the ability of a teen to discuss abstract concepts, it seems to hold great meaning for many of us and is therefore worthy of our attention. The dictionary defines spirit as the vital force that characterizes a human being as alive, the complex of human attributes that manifests as consciousness, thought, feeling, and will, regarded as distinct from the physical body. The soul is defined as the animating principle in humans, often conceived of as an immaterial entity. But if the soul or spirit is immaterial, how can we claim it exists? One answer is through personal experience. Just as the love we feel for a spouse, partner, or child cannot be measured with scientific tools, and yet is as real to us as the earth beneath our feet, the spirit or soul may reveal itself through a profound personal encounter with its mystery. I'd like to share some examples of spiritual experience from my own life and the lives of others to begin to illuminate the reference to this important element of our faith. Afterwards, I hope some of you will share your experiences as well. My first spiritual experience was when I was 12 years old. It was my first summer away from home, and I was attending a camp in New York State. It had been a challenging summer, as I observed two girls in our small bunk ganging up on a third, making her life miserable. One afternoon, when it was her turn to clean the cabin floor, they smeared ripe fruit pulp into the wooden planks. Their victim burst into tears, and I, not having the courage to stand up to them on her behalf, retreated to the outdoors. I felt overwhelmed by the realization that human beings are so profoundly capable of hurting one another. Then, without fanfare, I had an experience that I can only describe as waking up. It was as though I had been asleep. Then suddenly, my eyes opened. In that moment, I was fully present to the scent of the surrounding pine forest, the feel of the mountain breeze on my arms, and the warmth of the sun on my face. I noticed the solid form of the boulder beneath me and was acutely aware of the sounds around, including the drama continuing to unfold in the bunkhouse. But something had changed. I witnessed the events consciously, but without judgment, discerning the suffering of bullies and victim alike. I didn't realize it then, but this would be the first time I felt simultaneously compassionate and detached, a sense of equilibrium in the presence of challenging events. Later in life, during my career as a psychotherapist, this quality would be crucial in allowing me to be of service to others without becoming despondent in the presence of suffering. Like my experience at camp, the awakening of a self or consciousness beyond the body, mind, and emotions often seems to occur when least expected. At times, it happens on the heels of deep despair. A friend spoke to me of one such time in his life. His wife of many years had serious physical problems, which had developed into psychological ones. She had been admitted to a psychiatric facility, and her condition was deteriorating. the financial difficulties and stress of parenting his son under such conditions led him into a severe depression. In the midst of his dark night of the soul, he found himself giving up to a higher power the control he had always maintained over his life. He said, quote, "I sent up a white flag in my mind. Though I didn't even believe there was a set of ears listening, I said, if you want it, it's yours. I surrender." Unquote. With that, he experienced a profound emotional release. Gut-wrenching sobs shook his body as he allowed the totality of his pent-up feelings to be expressed. Afterwards, he said he felt more open than he'd ever felt in his life. Looking up, he saw in the room what appeared as a round, glowing object. In his words, it radiated pure love. While he'd always been an atheist, he called this vision God, having heard many people define God as pure love. He told me that this series of events changed his life. It created a state of trust in him so deep that he was able to find peace despite difficult circumstances. Some of the greatest figures in history report similar experiences. In his book, The Strength to Love, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. writes, "In Montgomery, after weeks of receiving threatening calls and letters in our home, I felt myself faltering and growing in fear. After a particularly strenuous day, I settled in bed at a late hour. I was about to doze off when the telephone rang. An angry voice said, 'Listen, we've taken all we want from you. Before next week, you'll be sorry you ever came to Montgomery.' I hung up, but I could not sleep. It seemed that all my fears had just come down on me at once. In this state of exhaustion, when my courage had almost gone, I prayed aloud. 'I am here taking a stand for what I believe is right, but now I am afraid. The people are looking to me for leadership, and if I stand before them without strength and courage, they too will falter. I am at the end of my powers. I have nothing left. I have come to the point where I can't face it alone.' At that moment, I experienced the presence of the divine as I had never before experienced it. I could hear the quiet sureness of an inner voice saying, 'Stand up for righteousness. Stand up for truth. God will be on your side forever.' Almost at once, my fears began to pass from me. My uncertainty disappeared. I was ready to face anything. The outer situation remained the same, but God had given me inner calm, new strength, and trust. I knew now that God was able to give us the interior resources to face the storms and problems of life." Experiences of this kind are so profound that many, not content to leave their occurrence to chance, have sought them out. In the 60s, this quest often involved mind-altering substances. One such substance, LSD, lysergic acid diethylamide, was first synthesized by Swiss chemist Albert Hofmann in 1943. He said that his accidental ingestion of this new compound created in him an altered state of consciousness, which he immediately recognized to be the same as a mystical experience he had as a child on a forest path above Baden, Switzerland. This experience, he said, gave him a glimpse of a miraculous, powerful, unfathomable reality. On the occasion of celebrating the fifth anniversary of his discovery, he said, "Millions will testify that we got valuable help on the way to what Aldous Huxley said is the end and ultimate purpose of human life: enlightenment, beatific vision, love." Current research points to the therapeutic benefit of such visions as well. Clinical trials in the use of hallucinogens have demonstrated the compound's ability to help veterans recover from post-traumatic stress disorder, addicts to overcome addictions, and to alleviate anxiety among terminally ill cancer patients confronting death. However, random use of hallucinogens can be physically exhausting or even dangerous way of expanding consciousness. And early pioneers, such as former Harvard University professor, Dr. Richard Alpert, reported being discouraged by the impossibility of maintaining spiritual consciousness once the drug wore off. His search for another way to achieve and maintain the clarity he'd experienced through drugs led him to India, where he met a guru who lived in a full-time state of bliss. Dr. Alpert became a devotee and was given the new name Ram Dass. In the presence of his guru, Ram Dass reported an awareness of a consciousness beyond his ego and the existence of a world beyond duality. When he returned to the West, he wrote a book about his journey called Be Here Now. Fortunately, one does not need to fall into despair, ingest drugs, or surrender to a guru to cultivate spiritual experience. Less drastic paths can also have profound results. Some years ago, while living in Sedona, Arizona, I took a class in shamanism. My teacher spoke about shamanic drumming and gave us the opportunity to become familiar with both the physiological and transcendent aspects of the practice. The repetitive drumbeat produced a monotonous pattern of two distinct tones that quieted the mind. The first stimulated the brain into an alpha wave state, leading to deep relaxation. The second generated theta brain waves, which, in his words, opened our spiritual heart, allowing our spirit to rise forth unimpeded, to access a world hidden from us in the busyness of our everyday lives. Other techniques and circumstances can provoke something similar. Last month, my husband and I visited Patty and Mary's house for a circle supper. After eating, our group took a walk to Marlborough Park to see the community garden founded by Mary decades ago. Our dinner conversation had included an exchange on the meaning of spirituality, which was extremely meaningful. But visiting the park took me even deeper. Walking along paths lined with dahlias, zinnias, and gigantic sunflowers, seeing garden bed after garden bed resplendent with ripe tomatoes, peppers, and squash, hearing the laughter of family and friends as they filled baskets with homegrown produce, transported me to a place beyond concepts and ideas. My senses came alive, and I entered the eternal now. My feet were planted firmly on the ground, but I felt as though I was flying. As the Indian mystic Osho once said, "Knowledge is interesting, but experience changes your life." The recently developed science of epigenetics reveals that changes in our inner world do more than create a state of bliss. They can have a profound and observable impact on healing physical illness and disease. Meditation, yoga, listening to music, being in love, and even tasting chocolate cake have also put me in touch with the transcendent quality of being. Since I consider myself an ordinary person, I must conclude that the capacity for experiencing a transcendent state of being is available to anyone. An awareness of the metaphysical is important because when all else fails, which everything must in the corporeal world, this deeper level of being can bring us acceptance and inner peace. If, as our third principle suggests, we are to encourage spiritual growth within our congregations, what steps can we take? A hypnotherapy student of mine once remarked, "I think spiritual experience can be found anywhere where people are willing to share in the moment from the heart." So when we break out into small groups after the service this morning, I invite you to speak with each other about your own acquaintance with spirituality. In honor of our third principle, and with deep respect for the diversity of our lives, namaste and blessed be.
Thank you, Eileen. We have time now for some discussion.
Yeah, unfortunately, I do not have a drum of the quality that my shaman teacher used in his course. And there is something about the particular construction of a shamanic drum that does produce those two tones simultaneously that I spoke of. And so in order to experience that particular thing, it might be interesting to look around it and see if there's someone in our own community that would have access to such a thing, such experience. That would be wonderful.
It'd be fun.
Yeah. You know, my husband had a one-on-one experience with Ram Dass. Ram Dass invited him via a phone call to meet with him in the hotel room when he was visiting Chicago decades ago. And so Peter went, and it would be really fun at some time for him to be able to share that story with you all as well.
Thank you so much, Eileen, for that wonderful talk.
So much for inviting me. I appreciate it.
Well, we really enjoyed it.